You know what doesn't belong in your epic summer plans? Getting burned by your old wireless bill. While you're planning beach trips, barbecues, and three-day weekends, your wireless bill should be the last thing holding you back. Maybe you should make the switch to Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So, while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. I like Mint Mobile, and I think you will too. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/investtalk. That's mintmobile.com/investtalk. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plans. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
On radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Tuesday, July 22nd, 2025 edition of Invest Talk. And being Tuesday, sometimes we like to surprise our listeners, and we are doing that today with a Two for Tuesday. Luke Guerrero is joining me on today's show.
Two for Tuesday.
I know you're a big fan of alliteration, so
I am a big fan of alliteration, and that also sounds like a Taco Bell meal special or something like that. Two for Tuesday. Now I want some tacos. See what you did.
Hey, nobody's going to deny tacos on Taco Tuesday. So
nobody should.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll go get tacos after this. Now, but we have an hour left before we can go get our tacos, and during this hour, we are going to help our listeners become better investors, giving them actionable advice, perspective, data, so they can bring that back to their own situation and make better decisions with their money. And in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance. We'll also collect some calls or gather some calls and answer them from our anytime listener line. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
This is Rob from Florida, longtime listener. Appreciate everything that you do. I have a quick question on a particular stock. Ticker symbol KMI, Kinder Morgan. And I'm interested in probably purchasing this for immediate long term. And I would like to get your opinion on it. Thank you again and have a great day.
All right, looking at Kinder Morgan is one of the largest midstream energy firms in the United States. I believe this used to be a limited partnership, but no longer is. So that's the good thing, is that dividend yield, which is right around 4.3%, that's going to be qualified dividends, which used to not be. So that's a positive there. And earnings are expected to be up 11% this year, 6% next year. And its relative strength is around 54. So, you know, kind of middling on its strength over the past year compared to the overall market. And it's been kind of going sideways over the past 6 months or so. What are your thoughts, Luke? What are you seeing in the data?
Well, in terms of revenue growth, it's pretty decent coming out of 2023, right? They hit peak revenue in December of 2022 with $19.554 billion, dropped dramatically to 15.1, projected to be about 16.5 at the end of this year. At the same time, margins have been expanding a bit, though, up from 13% net margin in 2022, projected to be 17.2%. this year. So you're seeing strong growth in their fee-based natural gas pipeline volumes, rising EPS as well. And because of that, They really outperform the industry, though it's kind of not difficult to outperform energy broadly if you aren't an oil name this year. And so they're only outperforming by 1.6%. Year to date, they're down 1.57. Over the past year, up 23.43. And that's all Brett led them to be trading in the upper end of their five-year range from a relative valuation perspective, looking at forward-looking price to earnings of about 20.5.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest worry here is that growth is not that great.
Yeah.
And profitability, return on equity is 8.5%, but they have a lot of debt on their balance sheet, which is common for these type of names because it's a highly capital intensive, right? Building out those pipelines, maintaining those pipelines, et cetera. But their free cash flow has dipped to about $2.7 billion trailing 12 months from a peak in 2021, around $4.4 billion. So certainly some weakness on that front. And the payout ratio is at 95%. So it's not like there's room for that dividend to go up without them really adding more debt on their balance sheet, which I don't love. I just think there's better opportunities out there. It's okay, but it just doesn't get me juiced up. And then you look at the chart, it's kind of neutral to bearish as well from its all-time high back in, what was that, January? Late January. So I don't know. I'm not really getting excited. It's not terrible, but doesn't excite me. What about you?
Yeah. No, I do tend to agree there. And when you add on with what you mentioned, right, with that slower growth, then it's in the upper end of its five-year relative valuation. That's where it becomes one of those names where I like the theme and I like the demand for energy and natural gas and nuclear and all these things over the next 5-10 years. But maybe this isn't the right way to play it.
I agree. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and time permitting, we will tackle all of it. Our main focus point is about stable coins, and we just had the Genius Act coming, and Luke has an interesting story of the naming of the Genius Act, so we'll talk a little bit about that, and then kind of what stable coins are, and a different type of stable coins that are out there and will likely come to market due to this this new bill that just passed. We also have other topics like tariffs. Reuters has looked at 279 different companies worldwide that have reacted in some way to the tariff war. And we'll dig into the numbers there. Also, buy now and pay later. That's a common way that individuals are financing purchases these days through companies like Affirm and Klarna. And there's a new way that FICO and the other rating, not rating agencies, but credit rating agencies. There we go. They are looking at incorporating those into their model. So we'll look at what that means for people that have those loans. And then if we have time, look at how investors are positioned into tech stocks, the Mag 7, according to the latest Bank of America survey. We also have voice bank questions on NVIDIA and then plans for kids. And, of course, questions that came in via the Invest Talk YouTube channel as well. And, of course, your live calls will always be number one. So give us a call now at 888-99-CHART. But we're heading into our first break of the hour. I'm ready. We are ready to talk about whatever's on your mind. So don't be afraid. Pick up the phone. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
Wanted to get your take on W.W. Granger.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time.
Commodities are incredibly volatile, so when the going is good, take some profit.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
My name is Mike. I'm calling in from Orange County, California.
And this is Lewis calling from Bolivia.
Let's go talk to Chris in Maine.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
First off, great show. I've learned a lot from you too.
888-99-CHART. Have you heard about the new InvestTalk store? That's right. You'll find great merch for the savvy investor. It's all there for you now at investtalkstore.com.
Luke, let's go take a look at the market today. We closed near the lows yesterday, and today was kind of a choppy day overall. You had the NASDAQ down about 81 points, so about 39 basis points, so 0.4% roughly. S&P was up 4 points, so barely positive there, about 6 basis points. The Dow was the strongest, up about 40 basis points. And really, large cap growth was where the weakness lied. You had NVIDIA down 2.5%, Broadcom down over 3%, Netflix down over 3%, Oracle down about 2%, Amazon down about 1%. So definitely of the bigger cap tech names, you had some weakness, but some strength out of the finance sector, consumer non-durables, and the industrial space as well. So what were you seeing in the markets today?
Yeah, certainly I didn't seem to see a lot of reason for the direction in the market. You did see that rotation, as you briefly highlighted, towards value, out of growth, but not really a specific factor for why that was happening. Could it be just positioning ahead of earnings, right? We're now going deeper and deeper into earnings season. You have big tech earnings and the August 1st, I don't even know, what deadline is this? The third iteration of the tariff deadline approaching at the end of the month?
I saw some today that Bessent hinted at that deadline being pushed back again.
I believe what he said was the deadline doesn't matter, something like that. So it's not only about it being pushed back, but essentially saying these deadlines are pointless anyway. But, you know, I don't think that the market is believing that this deadline is the final deadline. There will probably be another deadline after that deadline. I think probably what you're seeing is positioning towards earnings, because as I mentioned, right, you have big tech earnings. Going to be focused on the outsized AI CapEx? Are they going to continue with those capital expenditures? The thing that has been floating the market for the past 2.5 years, is spending to be going to be cut back as we start to see some deterioration of the U.S. economy? And so not just seeing how the performance was in Q2, but seeing what guidance is moving forward is how people are generally going to start to position money over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you did have rates down a little bit, especially in the back end of the curve. The dollar was down 0.5%. Gold finished up 1.1%. Bitcoin up about 2.4%. And WTI was down about 1%. So definitely some movements underneath the surface. The dollar continues to be weak. Gold continues to be strong. Looks like it's trying to break out to the upside. And like you said, Luke, we are in the midst of earnings season. So some big winners, some big losers on the day, as you would expect, but overall, not a whole lot of movements on the major indices as we head closer and closer to that potential deadline, which, you know, like you said, may or may not be a real deadline. Now, we receive questions from the comments section over on the Invest Talk YouTube channel on a regular basis, so let's tackle one of those questions now. Luke, Gary Miller. He's from the Department of Redundancy Department, says you can analyze. Can you analyze Ralph Lauren, RL, and share if this is a good time to pick it up? RL is the symbol.
Is it Lauren or Loren?
Well, he spells it Loren, but I'm pretty sure it's Ralph Lauren.
Hopefully we'll come to figure that out during this discussion.
Yeah. There you go. So Ralph Lauren is, let's see, it's about $17 billion market cap. Earnings supposed to be up about 12% this year, 10% next year. Revenue growth last quarter about 8%. Certainly a strong stock, relative strength at 91. But did he miss the boat here, Luke?
Yeah, it is strong. And one of the reasons why it's strong is comparatively looking at other clothing companies, right? So the return on equity here is about 30%. American Eagle, a competitor, is about 12.2%. And that's why it's trading at double the forward-looking earnings, trading about 20.3 times, again, on the upper end of that range, just like the last name that we looked at. And this is at a time where you are seeing slowing revenue growth as people start to pare back spending, new clothes being one of those areas where they would do that. Yet again, we see margins are expanding here. We're seeing a pretty consistent share buyback program, down from 75 million shares a couple years ago, down to about 60 million now. Now, one thing to note, though, there's a little bit of short interest out there, nothing too crazy. I think that the reason why this company has done, you know, particularly well, especially compared to its peers, is because of that margin expansion, right? If growth is slowing, but your business is becoming more efficient such that your utilization, your profit from your operations becomes better, the market obviously likes those things. And at the same time, you're seeing the brand grow internationally as well. 20.3 times, no laughing matter in terms of expensive, right? Or rather in terms of cheap, right? That's a pretty high valuation for a clothing company. Did he miss the boat though? I'm not sure. It seems to be justified given what we've seen of this company in terms of earnings over the past couple quarters.
Yeah, I worry a bit that the profits expansion is more short-lived.
Mm-hmm.
That's the history of clothing brands, right? You go through periods where you're in style. There's a lot of consumer spending. Consumer balance sheets are strong, and you've seen that as of late. But styles go in and out.
Yeah.
And usually when you're old news at some point, and suddenly you probably created overcapacity, oversupply within the market, and then you have to cut prices and dump inventory, and your margins suddenly contract. And if you look historically, if you just look at return on assets, for example, right now it's at about 10.87, but it went negative in 2021, yeah, which is expected. Well, even pre-COVID. Did. Yeah, but even pre-COVID, 2017, its return, yeah, assets went negative as well. So it can go through these periods. And I think he just missed the boat. Price of sales is at near an all-time high, or at 2.6. So one thing I like about it is a good balance sheet, very minimal debt with strong free cash flow. Like you said, buying back shares. But I just don't like the history of these names where there's just a lot of volatility to its earnings. And right now it feels like peak earnings from especially when you look back in history. Now we're heading to a break, still to come. Today's focus point, more answers to your questions, and we encourage you to call right now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART.
You've got two for the price of one. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are here, and they're taking your finance and investment questions now. 888-99-CHART.
Now, Luke, our main focus point today is about stable coins. And first, I think we need to address the recent bill that just passed Congress called the Genius Act. First off, what do you know about the Genius Act? And can you tell the listeners of why it's called the Genius Act?
Well, it's called the Genius Act because it's the Government Encouraging New Innovations and Utilizing Science Act. So Genius is an acronym. If you recall back in the day, this was Trump 1, right? He calls himself a stable genius. There's a lot of conjecture about whether or not that is also the reason why they've named it that bill. That's never been fully confirmed, though. The president did make a nod to it when he signed the bill, saying that they named it after him. So make of that what you will. But essentially, at a high level, what the Genius Act attempts to do is create a regulatory framework by which stable coins can be regulated and issued in the United States. Now, we can dive into all the positives and negatives of those things, and specifically of this bill, but there's a whole bunch of reasons that the administration thinks it'll be beneficial, a whole bunch of reasons that it might not be.
Now, stable coins are aimed to be a alternative to cryptocurrencies that are typically very volatile, and trying to turn them into, or cryptocurrencies in general, into mediums of exchange, as opposed to what the vast majority of the industry has turned into so far, which is more of elements of speculation and just trying to, you know, hodl and hope the number goes up, right? Mm-hmm. Now, stable coins in general are pegged to some sort of external asset. And we'll talk a little about what they can be. But the primary one is going to be pegged to the U.S. dollar or dollar assets. So it could be actual U.S. dollars, or it can be treasuries, for example, that are denominated in dollars, that are very safe, etc. And, you know, the end goal here is to say, okay, while you might accept Bitcoin, for example, as a vendor, as a store, when you do that, you open yourself up to currency risk, right? The fluctuations of that currency, which can be good, can be bad, but ultimately most companies don't want that exposure. And so they rather, you know, they want the convenience potentially of a stable coin or a cryptocurrency. However, they don't want that currency risk. And so the idea here is to turn cryptocurrency more into a medium of exchange. What do you think of that concept, Luke? Do you think that holds water, or do you think that is an excuse for just expanding the types of crypto assets that are out there?
I could talk for hours about this. But, you know, here's my primary thinking on the payment method thing. And that is, you know, you see it with Walmart, and one other company said they wanted to issue a stable coin because the businesses themselves are incentivized to do what? Move away from having to pay processing fees to Visa, MasterCard, American Express, whomever they use. And so they want to be able to do something that makes it cheaper for them. But in order for a transaction to happen, right, there are two parties to a transaction. In this case, there's a buyer and there's a seller. And so the buyer, who is using their Visa, their MasterCard, their American Express, is incentivized to keep using those things through reward programs, right? That is one of the reasons why people use credit cards to rack up points. Hopefully they're paying off those credit cards. But essentially, if you really want to move from the payment clearance system we have today towards stablecoins, you have to incentivize not the sellers, who are very much incentivized to not pay fees, but the buyers. And I just don't see anything in here or any real proposal that suggests that is feasible, at least in the near term. And that's just on that side. There's a whole other host of things we can get into about stablecoins.
Yeah. I mean, I think there needs to be an incentive to hold the assets in those coins that pay some sort of yield, for example, right? So if it's a stable coin and it's invested in treasuries, those treasuries earn a yield. And I know there's a lot of companies that are out there trying to create stable coins to basically capture that yield, to not pay the user and capture that yield. So to me, I think there needs to be and should be some sort of asset or stable coin that does pay some sort of a yield, so that it isn't, you are incentivized, right, to somehow over time keep more money in that stable coin, earn the yield, and then when you need to spend it, you go and spend it. And I think that's one way I think the industry can evolve. I will say that this is, to me, the first shot across the bow of the Visa and MasterCard networks that there's development of alternatives in a real way, but I think there is more work to be done for that to actually come to fruition. What are your thoughts?
I don't necessarily agree with that, because I mean, certainly there's more work to be done, but the problem here is this bill doesn't extend FDIC insurance. So let's say you want to get your yield from your stable coin, but the company goes under, doesn't matter. Yeah. Let's say, you know, there's no risk scam protection within this bill. And so I'm saying to you, put it in a money market fund or put it in a high yield savings account that is FDIC insurance. You're getting your 4.2%. You don't have the risk. And then you spend on your credit card. It just, there's so many gaps that they have to fill that I think this bill did absolutely nothing for.
Well, we'll talk after the break about the different types of stable coins that are out there as well, and kind of what we think of each type. Now, next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. U.S. housing market flashes warning signs for the economy. That story is tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein here with Luke Guerrero today, and we are ready to take your calls now on 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, we talked a bit about stablecoins and the new Genius Act, but let's talk about the types of stablecoins that are out there. Now, the most common one is a stablecoin that is collateralized. No matter what our day looks like, I think we can agree that we all need nourishment that fuels us, right? So let me tell you about Kachava's whole body meal shakes. I'm really liking them. And bonus surprise, the Kachava shakes come in 5 delicious flavors. Chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, coconut acai. Variety is a good thing. And it's easy to incorporate Kachava's whole body meal shakes into my daily routine. I like to personalize my Kachava by adding nice touches like frozen blueberries, almond milk, creatine. For me, the idea is to mix it up while keeping my body and mind nourished all day. In fact, Kachava is a whole body meal with plant-based protein that actually tastes delicious. In those 5 indulgent flavors I mentioned, you get 25 grams of 100% plant-based protein with every 2 scoops of Kachava. You get 85 plus superfoods, nutrients, and plant-based ingredients. Kachava is non-GMO. There are no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. There's no soy, no animal products, no gluten, and no preservatives. You can even try Kachava risk-free with their Love It Guarantee. Fuel your day with Kachava. Go to kachava.com and use code INVEST for 15% off on their subscription for a limited time. That's Kachava, KACHAVA.com, code INVEST for 15% off. Collateralized by the US dollar or US dollar denominated assets. So the most common are Tether or True USD. And so you basically get one for one ratio of the value of the stablecoin and the dollar. And that's very straightforward. And that allows for low or no volatility to cryptocurrencies that are out there, so that you know if you have a certain amount of Tether, for example, one day, you'll have the same amount the next day. Now, then from there, you get more volatile. And the next would be commodity-backed stablecoins. So the most popular is Tether Gold, and it's a cryptocurrency backed by gold reserves. And they say that they have gold reserves in Switzerland. But there are fees according to that. So just to store that, just like there would be if you owned a gold-backed ETF and storage there. And then there's crypto collateralized stablecoins. To me, that just sounds a lot like owning cryptocurrency, even though they're over-collateralized to some degree, meaning that they have more than $1 in the underlying cryptocurrency. So there's that. And then there's algorithmic stablecoins. This is, to me, where the bigger problems come in when there's some sort of, what was that?
Lunaterra was an algorithmic stablecoin.
Exactly. And that one plunged back in 2022. And because the peg to the US dollar was broken because Luna slumped more than 80% overnight, which we know these cryptocurrencies can move dramatically. So if the algorithm puts the coin into a cryptocurrency that is very volatile and has a big dip, you know, suddenly that stable coin isn't so stable. So to me, that's where the most risk is. How do you think about these 4 different types of stable coins?
Well, one of the arguments for the benefit to everybody with passing this bill, and certainly I am of the opinion that you do need a regulatory framework for these things. They're going to exist. You should have mechanisms. You should have enforcement mechanisms. But one of the big arguments was, well, the U.S. is in a lot of debt. Thanks to the big, beautiful bill, we're going to be in a lot more debt. The CBO's estimates now up to $3.5 trillion over the next 10 years. And that's only with some of the spending reductions being for a 5-year period. And what happens is you have your treasury-backed stablecoins. And those stable coins means that there's more treasury demand. And so if you're doing it one-to-one, you have to buy those treasuries. If there's more demand for your debt, well, then you can use cheaper yields, right? You can pay lower interest because there's all these people that want them. The problem is they're going to be focused on the short end. And as we all know, as listeners of this show, The bigger problem is on the long end of the curve right now being blown out, right? 10, 30 year. That's the big systemic risk there. And that's not really going to do much there, nor can you, as a government that is paying nearly $1 trillion in interest every year, continue to roll over short-term rates without long-term yield curve issues. And so, you know, that I think is probably going to be the most prevalent of the stable coins, the ones that are backed one-to-one by U.S. treasuries. And so I think that that does maybe carry some benefits to it, but there's definitely a lot of uncertainty there as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's some merit to things like commodity-backed cryptocurrencies, because as we know, gold continues to go up and central banks around the world are buying more and more gold. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I think the crypto collateralized stablecoins don't really make a whole lot of sense. Because just like the algorithmic one, right, where Luna dropped 80% overnight, why can't a crypto-backed stable coin also drop 80% overnight? So even if it's over-collateralized, suddenly it's not overnight. So I think those are the ones that would be very, very risky, that I would never touch. Something that I would feel more comfortable with, obviously, are anything that's treasury-backed or gold-backed or hard asset-backed. But the question is more about regulatory framework and whether this bill actually checks all the boxes. I'm a bit skeptical on that. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number to call. It's 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is David in San Jose. Thank you for all you guys do. I had a question regarding the stock for my son, NVIDIA. Looking to invest in it and hold it for a long term. Wanted to know your thoughts and a good time to get in. Thank you.
All right. Well, NVIDIA, probably the most popular stock in the market today, historically.
When Palantir has got to be more popular at this point.
You think so?
I don't know. There's some big Palantir lovers out there.
Well, I will say NVIDIA has a much better business than existing business than Palantir. But there's obviously a lot of hype around it. AI hype, a lot of investment in NVIDIA chips to build that AI infrastructure. And that's why earnings have gone from 33 cents in 2023 to $5.82 expected next year. That's $167 stock. So even based on forward-looking earnings, Luke, you're still in mid to high 20s multiple, which isn't egregious, to be frank, as long as this growth continues. The question is, will the growth continue? Will the hyperscalers, the Amazons, Googles, Amazon, Google, who am I thinking? Meta. What's the fourth one? There's one. Microsoft. Those four. Those are the hyperscalers. They're spending a dramatic amount on CapEx. Obviously, a lot of that is going towards NVIDIA. And the question is, over time, can they keep a stranglehold on the AI chip market? Or will companies like AMD, Intel, and others kind of edge into that and steal market share with comparable chips at maybe cheaper prices, et cetera? Similar to what AMD did to Intel, you know, a number of years ago. I think that's certainly a big risk that's out there. And this stock has certainly ran over the past few years. Like I said, it's trading at $167. Its recent low was around 86. So it's doubled basically from its April lows. So, I mean, how do you think somebody should look at NVIDIA from a long-term perspective at these prices?
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows NVIDIA. It was the first $4 trillion company. It achieved that this month. Congratulations to that and everyone who's invested in it. The growth is undeniable, right? You're looking at 64.2% growth on an annualized basis going back to 2020. You know, I think there's a lot of analogies drawn towards the dot-com bubble and companies like Cisco. I think you're in a different situation here. You know, NVIDIA is a hard product maker, right, with the chips, whereas in the other situations, you're talking about a lot of software companies, which are far more replaceable than the hardware, right?
Well, software. Cisco was hardware, right? It is hardware.
Oh, yeah, that's correct.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, I think that generally speaking, it's within the tech space, it is such a winner-take-all space that it is conceivable that a company that has held the dominant position within the GPU space could continue to do it in perpetuity. Now, the question is that going to happen? Is the downside risk right now higher than the upside risk? I think there is a lot of downside risk right now. That's not because I'm a perma bear on NVIDIA. It's just because they have been continuously hitting it out of the park. And the expectation is they continue to hit it out of the park. And at some point, CapEx does have to slow down, right? Businesses are cyclical. The economy is cyclical. At some point, as you saw earlier, right, when it was trading at around $80 in, when was that? That was in April, right after the tariff announcement, it slowly marched upward. You do see how volatile a name like this, which is pretty remarkable, if you ask me, that a $4 trillion name can be this volatile. So there is just a lot of downside risk here, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not just that other competitors might come and make similar or better products than NVIDIA, but it's also with history of the semiconductor space, which is very cyclical. Meaning you go into a recession, companies cut back, and it may not be just a recession. Like I said, the hyperscalers spending tens of billions of dollars per year on CapEx, all they have to do is step back a little and say, you know, while AI is important and we're going to continue to build AI tools, you know, the bigger question is, can AI, will AI drive actual positive business outcomes? Will there be an ROI on these tens of billions of dollars of investments for each of these companies? And, you know, as time goes on, it's going to be more than just, you know, $10 or $20 additional in monthly subscription revenue for a ChatGPT or something like that. It's going to need to be something that's more robust. I actually think that over time, and you see this back in the dot-com bubble, I think the analogy more is, who benefited the most from the AI bubble from the tech bubble, tech bubble 1.0 in the late 90s. And was it those tech companies? Yeah, there were a few like an Amazon that really benefited dramatically, but there were the rest of the economy benefited far more, right? The efficiency of information and data and they're the ones that really were allowed to or utilize that technology to its fullest. And the big question is now is, once again, will those big hyperscalers, will they be able to monetize all this investment, or will AI just suddenly become a standard feature on every piece of software, right? Just like being in the cloud suddenly became the standard feature of software everywhere starting in the late aughts, okay? So that's where I think it's going, is more, hey, the large language models are generally going to be, for the use case for the vast majority of applications, are going to be very fine, right? Whether you use a Perplexity or a ChatGPT or any of the other options that are out there for large language models, the basic use case for AI will be, for most people, will be similar. And so it won't really matter which one you use, outside of specific cases. And that will make the economic viability of the models a lot more challenging. And I think that's the biggest risk to NVIDIA, is that those names step back, and they say, we're not adding capacity at the same rate. And this is a volatile name. It does tend to fall. And I think it's a better time to buy this on a pullback when liquidity ebbs, probably sometime next year versus right now. Now let's head over and take another call. Two in a row at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin. This is Kevin from Southern California. I have a question regarding plans for kids. I have a 12 and 13-year-old, and I've already set up 529s for them. I've set up Utmas for them. And I'm interested in setting up some Roth IRAs for them as well. And I know they're not old enough to get a lot of traditional jobs. Wondering if you had some thoughts about or some ideas or some jobs that they could have now so they can get some earned income and we can get those set up for them to plan for their long-term retirement goals already. Look forward to hearing your thoughts as always. Thanks again for having a great show.
All right, great question here. I like that you're already starting with 529s and other ways to save for your children. And a Roth IRA for kids is something that is a great idea. The problem is the child needs earned income. And so, you know, if you have your own business, you can hire them. That's one way to do it. You know, there's labor age requirements. So it depends on how old your kids are.
It also depends what you're hiring them for, right? If you're hiring your three-year-old to be a receptionist, certainly the IRS is going to come knocking and say, you know, this is a very talented three-year-old or you're lying to me. So, you know, I think from what I've heard, a lot of people who want to do this for younger kids, try and get them some sort of brand ambassador, modeling, stock photography type of thing. Because again, it does have to be necessary, fairly compensated, age appropriate work. So you're right. It does depend what age you are. I kind of got the inclination that maybe it was a younger child from the way they were talking about it. But do keep in mind, for all of those of you who are listening, who are now thinking, you know, I want to get my young child involved in the family business, the IRS will come knocking.
Yeah, exactly. It does need to be, like you said, age appropriate, and it needs to be reasonable for them to do, right? Like you said, not reasonable for a three-year-old to be a receptionist, but, you know, I think there's flexibility in most businesses, right? Like you said, marketing, is it photography?
Things like that. Yeah, for sure. If you had a local tool business, right? And you wanted to stage your baby holding the wrench, and that's your wrench ad, you know, stuff like that. That seems perfectly reasonable to me. But certainly, as always, you know, neither of us are tax experts.
Consult your CPA. Yeah, yeah. We use Kobe in some of our photography. You think
I can set up a Roth?
Can I set up a Roth IRA for a dog? I've never seen that.
I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not.
He doesn't have a social security number. So there you go. Well, that leads us into our final break on Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein here with Luke Guerrero. And we have one goal each and every weekday, and it's help you become a better investor and help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART. And don't forget to cruise over to the new InvestTalk store. It's open now at InvestTalkStore.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
There's another question submitted from an online web forum, investtalk.com. And Pierre Pereira, he says, Centene Corporation has already dropped quite a bit on high volume. Does the price per share now look attractive relative to the value? What do you think? Now, Centene is one of those names being caught up in the Medicare cuts and more scrutiny on Medicare expenses in general. And earnings are expected to fall dramatically from $7.17 last year to $4.95 next year, $3.05 this year. Now it's at $27.89. But obviously, analysts are kind of still searching for where the bottom is in earnings. Luke, do you think this is worth a gamble at these levels?
I don't know. Nobody really knows. And it's Medicaid cuts, I believe.
Medicare
Sorry cuts. But, oh, no, I just want to get it out there. But I think nobody really knows the shape of the cuts, which is the problem, right? So with the big, beautiful bill, which I swear I'm going to stop calling it that at some point, with the Trump bill, it pushed forward the continuation of the tax cuts and bonus depreciation for businesses to immediate, right, this year, or rather next year, I think. And then pushed out all of the Medicaid cuts until after the midterm election for political reasons, right? It's $1 trillion a year in Medicaid cuts. And so I think there's a lot of uncertainty of the way the shape of that is going to work out, because there is no one system that polices and creates Medicaid, right? Medicaid and Medicare is funding, or Medicaid is funding from the government towards the individual states. And so each state implements things within the law as required in order to receive that funding. And so everyone's kind of trying to figure out what the shape of the cuts are actually going to be, because it's going to vary from state to state. And I think that's where a lot of the uncertainty is for a company like Centene, but also companies within that industry.
Exactly. And that's the murkiness of their future business. And that's why everyone's kind of sold it willy-nilly. Now, it is down extreme. I think it's a reasonable bet at this point because there's so much priced in. And the one reason why I say that is mainly because of the balance sheet. There's not a lot of long-term, or not a lot of debt. That the debt to equity ratio is only 0.65. So I think, and they have a lot of short-term cash to offset their long-term debt. So I think that there's a lot of potential upside here. There's still potential downside for sure. But I think a lot of the bad news has been priced in. So it's still very, very high risk because of that lack of uncertainty. And you have to look at it such. If you can handle that high risk, then I think it's reasonable at these levels. Now, lastly, Luke, let's touch a bit on tariffs and how businesses are reacting to these tariffs. This is coming from Reuters. Looked at 279 different companies worldwide from quarterly financial reports, interviews, statements from company officials, etc. And it's pretty interesting to see how they are reacting. What are you gleaning from the data that they reported?
Yeah, I think you saw a little bit of it in PPI. Not that PPI is measuring inflation or tariff impacts directly, right? Because it is producers' prices is domestic production. But a little look through showed you that the producers themselves had their costs higher, right? And that's exactly, you know, you have the administration celebrating $100 billion in tariff revenue, but where does that revenue come from? Mm-hmm. It comes from consumers and it comes from businesses, and a little bit of it comes from the suppliers as well, right? There's not exactly a 100% split, you know, cut somewhere, or 33, but it is obvious that businesses are being inundated with costs that they did not have last year, and that seems to be a problem for profitability.
Yeah, and if you look at the 279 companies, about 90-ish of them have increased prices. So it's about a third, roughly. And you had profit warnings from about a quarter. 66, let's see, it's a seven, it's close to 100 of them they've withdrawn or cut guidance completely. So you're seeing the impact here across the board. It's not the majority of companies that they're looking at that are reacting dramatically, but it's certainly they're all reacting in some way, shape, or form. Usually, either price hikes, profit warnings, withdrawing guidance, supply chain changes, etc. So that's how most of these companies are reacting. Well, that about does it. I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. And if today's show made you think about your own financial picture in any way, maybe your investments, your taxes, your retirement planning, and whether your current path is really working for you, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button, and you can schedule a call with myself or Luke to help bring clarity and confidence to the path that you are on. Now, we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And if you haven't already, head over to the new Invest Talk store. com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.